This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, it's Fitz, and if you don't know who I am, here's a quick bio. Veteran sports journalist who writes, does TV, radio, and is a longtime podcaster. Also, I have stage 4 prostate cancer, so my doctors advised me to stay home during these COVID-19 concerns. So what am I doing with my time? I'm calling some of the many friends, athletes, coaches, and colleagues who have been part of my life during more than 30 years in journalism. Oh, and I'm hitting the record button. Welcome to my life and the Life of Fitz podcast. If one was going to pick a defensive player that epitomized the heyday of Kansas State football under Bill Snyder, it would probably be linebacker Mark Cimino. Coming out of Kansas High School powerhouse Smith Center, Cimino arrived in Manhattan somewhat ill-prepared for the complexities of the college game. But one thing Mark Cimino has never been short on is work ethic. From learning the pre-snap reads of a middle linebacker at the major college level to making the weight room a second home, Cimino became a dominant force for the Wildcats during the late 1990s. He was named the Big 12's Defensive Player of the Year after that 99 season, his senior year, and went into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2012. After leaving K-State, Cimino was drafted in the third round of the 2000 NFL Draft by the Atlanta Falcons. He spent 3 seasons in Atlanta, followed by 3 seasons each in Philly and New Orleans. Mark completed his career with a final season with the Kansas City Chiefs in 2010. It provided him an easy transition into his career as a private strength and conditioning trainer in the Kansas City area. Eventually, he got into high school sports, and it became an opportunity a few years ago to work exclusively with the athletes at Gardner-Edgerton High School on the Kansas side of the Kansas City Metroplex. He is the athletic department's strength coach. The presence of Cimino roaming the playing surface at K-State with his oversized shoulder pads and neck roll seems both fresh and distant in the history of K-State football. But Mark left a deep mark on the culture of K-State football by setting a very high bar in terms of work ethic. Now let's call Mark Cimino in Gardner, Kansas.
Hello.
Hey, Mark. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing, Tim?
Good, man. I'm really good. Are you going to be having school in person there in Gardner-Edgerton?
Not sure. Oh. Not sure yet. It's going to be, I think, it's determined off of the gating criteria through Johnson County. So that's kind of a fluid situation. So I think they adjust that maybe every 14 days. And I think that they're going to be coming out with some of that information here in the next few days or the next 14 days. So we'll see. We don't start till school doesn't start till September 7th or 8th.
Okay.
Anyway, so
got some time.
We're not sure. But
how is your life?
How is it?
Yeah.
It's good. It's good. I've been in Kansas City here for, gosh, we probably, I think it was 2007 that we bought a house in this area, and was back and forth for a few years in the off season, and being in New Orleans and back and forth during that time. And after I was done playing, and we were actually out for at Arizona for a while. I was kind of trying to decide whether I was gonna try to continue to play, or yeah, I had some injuries at the end of my career, and then just decided to come back to Kansas, and then it worked out where I ended up playing for a little bit longer with the Chiefs and then retired. And after that, I started my business here, and we've been here for gosh, it seems like yesterday in some ways, but it's also seemed like a long time.
Time does.
In some way. So, but it's good. You know, I've got two kids, two girls, and they're growing up fast, and my wife, and being at Gardner, coaching, you know, I had my business there for almost 7.5 years, and a lot of energy and time in that place, and a lot of great people that I've been able to meet, you know, being in this Kansas City area. So it's been good, though. I'm enjoying life. This time, obviously, for everybody, is very trying. You know, with the COVID and with just kind of circumstances, but hopefully things will be can get better here soon.
Well, to fill people in, you're the strength coach at Gardner, and how was that transition from going from private business into the school environment?
Just from a coaching standpoint, it's I like it better because I get to see the student athletes more often. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, in the private sector, you might get an athlete you would work with for 4 years, but typically that might just be in their off season. You wouldn't have a big impact during a season if they were participating. If they're a multi-sport athlete, you maybe get them in the summertime. So being in the school setting, I feel like it allows me a lot more hours total with each athlete.
Right.
And I feel like you can have a bigger impact. You know, you're obviously able to control more of what they're getting, what you're prescribing, whether it's speed development work or strength work or plyometrics or whatever you're doing. So you're able to control that a little bit more. Being in that environment. So I really enjoy that, having the opportunity to be consistently with the kids in season, off season, summertime. You know, we take a few breaks off during the course of the year, but for most of the year, we're in some level of training.
That's awesome. I mean, like a teacher, you get to see, the kids progress. I mean, from sometimes scrawny freshman into an impressive senior. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's crazy because, I mean, kids just change so much. I mean, you've got some kids you just know when they come in as freshmen, they just haven't developed at all, but you're just kind of waiting for those things to happen. And being there, this would be starting the start of my third year there. I've been there two full years. So some of those kids that are freshmen going into their freshman year will be going into their junior year. So it's just, it's cool. It's really cool to see their development. And there's so many things from a training standpoint. Like to me, like you, first thing you have to do is you have to learn about the process of training, about, you know, how to do the movements, you know, understanding positions. And so all those things sometimes take a long time, especially if you're going to do it the right way. And those things take a while, and then you develop that foundation, and then you start to build on top of that foundation. So you definitely, when you know you have them for four or five years, depending if they're coming in as eighth grader or whenever you see them first, you can really have a big impact because you don't have, I mean, there's no reason to be in a major hurry to try to get any specific place. So you really take your time and make sure you're really developing a great foundation for them, and a movement foundation, and then build strength and speed and all those things on top of that.
Really cool. Do you work just with football or all sports?
All sports.
All sports.
Yeah, all sports.
So
yeah,
that,
male, female, and yeah.
Yeah, that's giving you some challenges. I mean, you have a background in lifting for football, but you had to learn a lot of other things along the way, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, to me, I always just try to treat it as an athletic, try to develop them as athletes. And then let, you know, the sport coaches obviously are going to refine what they're doing from a sport-specific standpoint. So, but most kids in high school, they just need they need to learn how to move, and they need to develop some level of strength. Now, certain sports can require more strength than other sports, but just depending on what's required, those are the things you're trying to develop for each specific sport.
But it's football you love, isn't it?
I do love football.
I know.
I do love football. But I do, I mean, man, we have some kids that are, man, they're just, I'm blown away by their ability levels, you know, boys and girls. And it's not just football players, but I just like, and I always tell them, like, if you're bought in and you're, I don't care what it is that you're doing. If you're bought in and you're going to work hard, and like, I'm 100%, like, yeah, going to do everything I possibly can to help you be the best you can be, you know, and that is, that's pretty cool when you see a kid that's just has that drive and wants to be able to be the best.
Yeah, that wasn't me in high school. It took a while to get the drive.
But yeah, sometimes it takes longer than other times, you know.
When you didn't have a choice in high school. I mean, growing up in Smith Center, it was just part of the culture. I mean, it's not, I don't want to say that you didn't have a choice in, like, force, but it was just what you were surrounded with. I mean, it was the whole thing in Smith Center under Coach Barta. It was an incredible, incredible football program in which you got to be a part of.
No question about it. I mean, growing up in Smith Center, like, that was it. I mean, Friday nights and, you know, the cheerleaders throwing the little footballs out, you know, after a touchdown, and going and pretending like you're the running back or whatever position you liked, and running around in the back. And I mean, that was what it was all about. I had two brothers that were older, 10 and 8 years, Tim and Jeff. And, you know, my brother Tim, he was a basketball player. So, I mean, I was kind of into basketball because he was a basketball player, and Jeff played football, and they won a state championship when he was a junior. So, it, like you said, it was, I mean, if you were a male student at Smith Center, there was a really good chance you were playing football. And that tradition, you can't say enough about what Coach Barta did to create that, and the success that he helped build, and what that did for that community, and what it continues to do for that community. So, I mean, I was just fortunate to grow up there and be a part of it.
And then you go to Kansas State. I don't know of many football players that can claim the coaching pedigree you had from high school to college. I mean, that's just absolutely remarkable. How were Coach Barta and Coach Snyder similar and different?
Coach Barta, from a similarity standpoint, from the fundamentals, was very big for both coaches. And obviously, being a high school player, that, to me, that's, from a development standpoint, if you were to, you know, talk about the best way to be a good college player and beyond, like, you want to have great fundamentals, and, you know, learning the game, learned how to play with your hands as a big defensive player, how to block, how to tackle, doing all those things. And Coach Barta was really big on that. You know, and Coach Snyder was the same. You know, he was about fundamentals and doing things the right way. I think from a philosophy standpoint for football, you know, Coach Barta, I would say, and it makes sense because you're in high school, but it was very simple what we did. Like, it was very simple, and it was about executing at the highest level, and it didn't matter what the defense or what the offense was going to do. We were going to be able to execute at a higher level, and that was why we were going to win. I think when you get to college, it's a little bit harder to do that. So I think there was probably more offensively with Coach Snyder, like, was a lot more complicated, a lot more scheme type things that he did from a coaching standpoint. So I'd say probably that would be the major thing. But, you know, the personalities, you know, Coach Barta was very relaxed, very laid back, but could get into it, and Coach Snyder was very methodical in how he looked at things, and very controlled. So kind of similar personalities, but different in a few different ways as well. So, yeah, but I mean, like you said, having those two coaches over the course of 9 years, you know, that was playing football. So, yeah, I'm pretty blessed.
What's your first really good football memory from Smith Center?
I mean, there's probably ones that were before that, but I can remember, I mean, was the first one that sticks out to me the most would be when my brother went to the state championship. And being a younger kid, I remember being at the game before state and winning, how excited everybody was and how big a moment that was. And then that year just happened to be the state championship for that class ended up being in Manhattan at K-State.
Wow.
And I just remember thinking, I was like, my gosh, how cool is it to get it for him to get to go out there and run around on that field, you know? And at that time, K-State had the old turf. I mean, the old turf with the middle of the field was painted on. So if you land on there, you lost your entire arm. Like it was over. But I mean, at that time, that wasn't what you're thinking about. It was just, how cool is it to get that opportunity to be able to go and play? Cause not very many people in the state of Kansas have that opportunity to do that. So that's probably one early football memory that sticks out I would say probably drove me in some ways to want to play, you know, and it was pretty cool that happened to be in Manhattan where that memory took place.
That is pretty cool. It's amazing as kids what we think is just awesome. And then you look back and you go, God, that turf was crap. That was just horrible playing surface.
It's not good.
No, it was like, as bad as you can find.
What shoes he's going to wear. Like, I remember all that. Like, what kind of shoes are you going to wear? Because, you know, I mean, it's a different surface. We're going to wear tennis shoes or whatever. And trying to figure out the best thing. So it's funny.
How easy is or difficult a decision was it to go to K-State?
It was a pretty easy decision because, I mean, I told the story before, but I mean, I really wasn't heavily recruited. So, and again, from being from Smith Center at that time, you know, the recruiting wasn't as big at that point. Exposure was harder to get. There was a connection there because of Brooks Barda, Coach Barda, my brother Jeff being there. So there was that connection there that allowed me, once they offered me, it was pretty much a done deal because there was nobody else and I wasn't going to wait for anybody else to step in. I had some junior colleges that had called me and I had letters from schools, but to my knowledge, not any real interest. As far as the scholarship goes. So it became an easy decision. I took a couple days and really because Coach Levitt just told me, he goes, take a couple days to think about it rather than just tell me yes or no right now. He said, take a couple days. And so I did and I made that decision. At that time, I felt like I got offered, I don't know if it was, I think it was relatively early maybe in the process. I didn't go to the camp in the summer. I know, looking back, they wanted me to go to camp prior to my senior year. And I played baseball and, you know, I know camps are expensive and stuff. My family, we probably weren't the best position to like go out and just pay $200 and some for a camp.
Yeah.
So I didn't end up going to the camp in the summertime, which, you know, they wanted me to attend that. Coach Levitt did. But, you know, during the season, I think it was maybe game 3 or 4, they came out and watched me play in Victoria, Kansas. And then the next day, Coach Snyder called and they offered me and Coach Levitt, I talked to him. And then, like I said, I took a few days and then I went ahead and committed. And that was it. Was, you know, at that point, finished out the season and then was excited preparing to get to Kansas State.
Man, that had to be just a huge news to have K-State coaches show up for Smith Center versus Victoria.
Yeah. You know who was on that team at that time in Victoria? Who? Monty Beisel. So Monty Beisel was a sophomore.
Oh my gosh.
And I was a senior. Yeah, so he was in that. He was playing in that game because it was in Victoria, and yeah, it was. He was at that game, and he was a big kid, man. He was a sophomore, or he was. I mean, he was a big, physical kid. So you knew he was going to be something else, and but that just was again kind of a side note to that story.
That's crazy
how that happened. Yeah, yeah. Two future Wildcats on that field that day.
That's just amazing. I look back at that time of K-State football when you came in. What year exactly did you come in? 95?
95, yeah. 95. That's my red shirt.
It was all happening. You know, it was the program had broken through with back-to-back bowls when you arrived, and it had to seem like anything could happen within K-State football when you arrived, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was rolling. I mean, it was rolling. And, you know, as far as for me being a defensive player, the defensive culture that was there from a defensive standpoint and the mindset that those guys had was unbelievable. Like as a young player coming in, like I was like, my gosh, this is what it's all about. You know, like this is the mindset it takes to play high level defense. So, I mean, that was the thing that probably was the biggest, like, wake up to me when I got there was just the level of, like, preparedness mentally and physically, like, what you were trying to do to play at that level defensively. It was, you know, Mario Smith and Niall Wyer and Chris Canny and, you know, Tim Colston and all, you know, Dirk Oaks. I mean, there's all these guys there that are just all about being dominant defensive players. So that was a thing that really stuck out to me when I got there and what it took and how to prepare, and the attitude it took to play at that level.
I want you to stop and think about the personalities of the guys you just mentioned. It's like you cast a movie.
I mean,
Niall Wyer is just a Hollywood character. And then the soft-spoken, slight lisp defensive tackle who seems like the sweetest guy in the world who will tear your head off on Saturday.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. Yeah. Dirk Oaks kind of got the country thing going on, even though he's can't see. It was just amazing. Yeah. Niall Wyer remains one of my favorite personalities in K-State football history. I mean,
what a guy. Yeah. Oh, and a great player. My gosh, he was such a good player. The group and Purcell Gaskins and I think of our linebacking crew. And I mean, it was a group now. I mean, and it was an eye opener being a young player from Smith Center going into that and just seeing it. Like I said, I mean, the difference. All these young players, when I coach high school football, but young players don't understand how fast and how hard you can play the game until you get to that level. Mm-hmm. Because you're capable of doing those things. You just don't understand that you are capable of it at that point, typically. No, but when you get to that level, you either have to do that or you don't play. You're not going to you have to be able to step up to that level or you don't play. So, it's trying to draw that out of kids. Like when you have them in high school, like understand, like you can play at a way higher level than you think you can is a hard thing to do. But when you get in an environment like that, like you better step up or you're never going to touch the field.
Yeah. I'd imagine the first time young Mark Cimino saw Purcell Gaskins, he went, what the hell?
Like, man, do I belong here?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, you talk about maybe of all the physical freaks in K-State football history or any football program, he's got to be way up there as a linebacker who's a high jumper. What? What?
Yeah, he was a special athlete. I mean, like you said, a high jumper. And, I mean, he was physical and strong and explosive. Yeah. Yeah, there was a great group, and that's just walking on campus my first year. But and that just comes to the point, like, I mean, things were rolling. I mean, Coach Snyder had things rolling, and it was just a matter of building on that foundation that had been laid years before that.
I've often wondered this, when a small town kid like you rolls into a multicultural locker room where there's just, I mean, I ran into it in college, just moving into a fraternity, you know, just the different backgrounds and the different personalities. And you were all so similar in high school, even though there were some different personalities, but you all kind of rooted in the same thing. How big of a shock to the system was that?
It was different, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed getting to like meet people from all over the country, you know. We had a lot of players from Florida. We had a lot of players from, you know, Texas and all over Oklahoma and California and just the personalities and just how it was. And because we had personalities. I mean, I can't imagine other teams had as many different personalities as we had on those teams. And I mean, and in many ways, like, I think that's a part of what made those teams so special, is just that combination of those different personalities coming together and working for the same goal. And I really do. I just, like, that's a big part of that recipe, the success that we had. Obviously, the ability on the field matters, but the way we were able to gel through all the different personalities we had on those teams, coming from all those different places, and how we all grew up differently was a big part of it.
Just incredible time in K-State football. Mm. When you walk in the door, are your coordinators at that point Stoops and Lovett? Or Bob moved on by then?
Bobby was there the first year.
Okay.
And Coach Lovett was there my first year. That was who recruited me, Coach Lovett. Bobby Stoops was there. He was the defensive backs coach. And then they both left.
That's right.
And then that was when Coach Cope came in. The second year, my first year I was going to be playing. He was going to be the DC. And then he passed. And that was when Mike Stoops and Coach Venables. I can't remember if Coach Venables was a co-DC right away or if that came later.
You know, that's one of those things I should probably know, but my brain doesn't keep.
Yeah. but that, I mean, again, that's an example of, I mean, just those names.
Oh, no.
Kind of coaches that we had there. You know, on top of having Coach Snyder as a head coach.
Hey, it's Fitz. Let's hit the pause button right here and take a little break.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I can't imagine, after you described Bill Snyder and Roger Barta, all of a sudden your linebackers coach are Jim Lovett and then Brent Venables.
Yeah.
a little intense. I would have to say Venables probably passes Lovett, and I don't even know how that's possible.
I would probably disagree with that. I think I would disagree with that. But it was, they were different. They were different. And again, that's the perception of a first-year player versus my freshman, sophomore, and junior year with Coach Venables. My redshirt year with Coach Leavitt. And again, like I said, at Smith Center, we kept things very simple. As a middle linebacker in Smith Center, I lined up right over the center, and I ran to the ball.
Right.
That was it. That's all I did. That was my only job. Go make tackles. No real pass responsibility, nothing. Like, I just, that's all I did. So getting to Kansas State, and again, having a coach like Coach Leavitt, who's an intense guy, really, really intense guy, it was a difficult transition that first year for me. I mean, I had to learn what an A gap was and a B gap and a C gap and, you know, like where I have to call the front, like left or right, depending on the formation. And this is how I have to fit on this run play. And this is the guy I have in coverage on this play. So all of a sudden there are all these things are things that I'm not thinking about at all in high school, but now pre-snap, you know, in less than 5 seconds, I'm have to process all of these things. So for every young player, that becomes an issue because at some point you're going to have to go through that, whether that is happening at your high school, whether it's happening at your middle school, or if it's happening when you get to college. Like at some point you have to learn how to process those things pre-snap. Once you get the call, then you see the formation, you go pre-snap, go through your checklist, and then you play at that point. It's just getting that point. So having Coach Leavitt, I don't know that he was always the most patient person with the young player, especially because in some ways they were thinking maybe as a freshman I might have played. Yeah. So they were kind of trying to get me ready to play, which made it for a young player, made it worse because again the intensity was high. I'm trying to learn things at an accelerated rate. So again, my perception of that is Coach Leavitt was maybe a little bit more intense than Venables was at that time in my life.
Oh dear. Oh dear.
Yeah.
But I guess when you got to Brent, there probably wasn't a little more ability to relate to your coach. And because he'd just been through it, he'd done all the stuff you were doing, and that probably had to help you tremendously.
Yeah, it did. And there were a lot. I mean, obviously, both incredibly great coaches. But like you said, like he had just finished up playing. He still kind of had his foot. He could understand what we were. Again, when you're playing, you know what is easy to do and what is hard to do, you know, like from a scheme standpoint, like, man, this is really hard to do, or plays that are harder to make than other plays. Mm-hmm. So I think in some ways, the coach, when you're looking at it that way, it makes it a little bit easier, even though if as a defensive coordinator, you're asking your linebackers to do this, then that's what you got to get done. Doesn't matter what the scheme says, so you got to figure a way to get it done. But, you know, Brent being younger and again, there were definitely, there was some intensity there, no question. And I think it drove us as a linebacker unit because of that intensity, because I mean, we had a high standard. I mean, the standard was set very high, and if it wasn't met, then there was going to be issues. But, the way it worked, the way it gelled, you got the best out of all of us on as a linebacking core.
I'd imagine there's no surprise for you that Brent Venables is regarded as one of the great coordinators in college football now.
No, yeah, absolutely not. I mean, he was a great coach then, and he's just such a young coach. And the things that he's done in the course of his career coaching, and he's still a young coach. Like he's been coaching forever, you know, and he's still a young coach, and the things that he's accomplished, it's pretty cool. You tell people, yeah, that was my linebacker coach in college. So it's, it's kind of nice to be able to say that you played for guys like Coach Leavitt and Coach Venables. And
incredible. It really Coach is Bennett. Incredible.
Yeah. Coach Gush.
I'm gonna bring this up. What are your memories of that 98 title game?
Oh, it's 98 title game. I think I maybe watched the game one time. Mm-hmm. So I remember the end of it. And I remember having a lead and it kind of falling apart and, you know, just kind of everything just fell apart at the end. You know, I can remember when they announced the score. Yeah, it was a tough loss. Like, obviously for Kansas State fans, like, it's the one you look at and just wish you could do over again. Mm-hmm. But it is what it is. Like, this point,
I know.
You know the team that we had at that time, and what I know what we were capable of doing. It was just a shame that we weren't able to finish that game off, and then have the opportunity, hopefully, to be able to play for a national title and do something that had never been done at Kansas State.
Yeah, you were a junior. You come back your senior year. You're Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year, first team all conference. As you look back, I mean, that's just a remarkable course of events for a guy from Smith Center who didn't know how to line up basically at the start to get to that.
Yeah.
It took a lot of hard work, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It did. One thing as a young player, I remember too, the pulling guard on a counter or something like that. No, I have no chance. No chance. I'm running the opposite direction. At bull prep my freshman year, we're at the Holiday Bowl. We're playing Colorado State. I'm redshirted. I'm done. But I'm going through bull prep, and they're running these counters, and I'm going the completely wrong way at full speed, of course. So in my mind, like, as a young player, that was where I was at. Like, and then I tried to take pride in, by the time I became, definitely by my sophomore, junior year, like as far as reading plays and things like that, I became pretty good at it, I felt like. So there was a lot of growth that came through that. And like you said, I mean, being a part of a great defense with great, great, great defensive coaches and great defensive teammates, it allowed us to play great defense. You have to do your job.
Right.
You have to do your job. If you try to do the other guy's job, or he tries to do your job, then that's where you put holes in your defense. And that's where you give up yards. And that's when it just takes one mistake and it's an 80-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
So great defenses. And that's what we prided ourselves on is we just did our job, and we did it as fast and as reckless and as physical as we possibly could on every single play. And that was our mindset. And even though I was running the wrong direction my first year, I knew that was the mindset, because I couldn't run the wrong direction slow, because I was going to go. And that was the mindset of our defense. The guys next to you, we're going to go. And when we figured out exactly where we're supposed to be on every single play, we knew we would have one of the best defenses in the country because of that mindset. So I think that was, as a young player going into that program, all I knew is I was like, I don't know if I'm going to play or what's going to happen. I'm not going to make any forecasts like that, but I know I'm going to work as hard as I possibly can. And I'm going to give everything I have when I'm out there.
Yeah.
And that's the only two things that I could control. And that's what my mindset was. I tried to do that every opportunity I had, in practice, or whether it was winter conditioning or whatever it was.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny you bring up that 95 Holiday Bowl. That maybe it was because I was young as a reporter, but that's still one of my favorite bowl games. It was just something about that whole week in San Diego, which had to be really cool for you, you know, being a kid from Smith Center that ends up in San Diego. But there was a ton of fans there. There were the events were fun. The game was how it played out was really incredible. Just amazing memories.
That was a really great memory. You know, talking to my parents, you know, that's one thing that they're always just like, oh my gosh, like it's just, we're so appreciative. Like you know, playing football, like we went places and saw things and did things we would never have done or seen if we didn't go to that bowl game, if we didn't go to the Fiesta Bowl, you know, like those are things that our families and get to experience along with us that are so special. And it makes the game so special. It kind of gives you, I mean, it just makes you proud of being able to do those things and have that your whole family, be able to, I guess, enjoy that with you.
Yeah. That 97 Fiesta Bowl, when Coach Snyder brought in all those JUCO guys, how big of a shock to the locker room was it? But I imagine you quickly discovered guys like Jeff Kelly and Compton could really, really play football.
Yeah. We were just excited. I mean, for a guy like Jeff coming in, I mean, he was recruited, you know, I think there was a big recruiting kind of battle for him through, I think, Oklahoma and K-State, I think at the time. And I just remember Coach Venables just like, man, this guy can play. Like, this guy is a football player. So we were fired up to have him coming in, into that group going into the 97 season. And then when he got there, like, I mean, Jeff's personality is so, I mean, such a great personality and such a good guy. Like, and that was what he was, you know, and he worked hard. And then when we start playing, it's like, my gosh, he's downhill. He's knocking guys in the backfield. I mean, I don't know how many tackles for loss he had, but it was like 20. I mean, it was something. It wasn't even something you could think was possible. It's how aggressive he was playing and how downhill of a player he was. So, just from Jeff coming into that group, and then obviously, you know, Bishop and Darnell and all those guys that they came in and they had the mindset that was we're going to win. You know, like this is. We're going to win here. We're going to play for titles here. And that was our mindset. That was our focus throughout that summer, going into that 97 season. But yeah, it was just an example of, like you said, personalities, you know, and then they were just the right personalities, how everything, came together, you know, and how we gelled as a team and as a defensive unit, as an offensive unit. It was pretty cool.
And Michael Bishop brought that almost bulldog mentality you have on defense to the offensive side of the ball. He was so determined, just not always doing the right thing, but, again, doing it 110%.
Yeah, he played so hard, and he had supreme confidence that it was going to get done. And that gave us supreme confidence on defense that when it was third down and seven, like he was going to figure a way to get the first down. And also as a defensive player, when you see an offensive guy who has a defensive mindset as far as how they attack the game, you want to get behind a guy like that. Yeah. And that was what Mike was about. Just going back and watching the plays that he made during his career and his abilities. And again, it was just that time, you know, that time and then K-State football. And it was special. It really was.
I remember that first game in Northern Illinois when he broke that long run. I'm like, well, that's something different.
Yeah. He was just scooted down the sideline there.
Yep.
They made that play.
Wow. You move on to the NFL. 10 years in the NFL, Mark. That's absolutely incredible. Congratulations on that. That's
Thank you.
Not many guys get to do that. Not many guys get to make the NFL, but to go into double digits. 3 years basically with the Falcons, Eagles, and Saints each, and then the final year with the Chiefs. Do you, in your mind, do you tie yourself to one organization in particular?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. Like, obviously, I finished in New Orleans. I mean, I finished in with Kansas City, but that was like I just had a cup of coffee there,
right, and,
you know, was out. So, you know, each place, I think it's a different times in your career. You know, being in Atlanta as a young player, like, you know, the way I look at it, I mean, I'm a rookie there. You're kind of trying to find your way into the National Football League. How do you fit on the team? Trying to establish yourself as a player, what that looks like. You know, again, coming from Smith Center, Kansas, going to Manhattan, Kansas, and then living in Atlanta, Georgia. And, you know, that's a change.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then in playing, you know, my rookie year, I played a decent amount. Like, I played a lot of nickel linebacker and was in a lot of packages because we had a couple injuries. My second year, I played kind of in stretches a good amount, started for a few games and had the opportunity to put some good film out there. And then my third year, I didn't really play at all on defense. I got nicked up like in one of our early preseason games. I couldn't play. And I just didn't ever, we had a new D coordinator and I never really got a chance to play that year. But then I get traded to Philadelphia and then I have a great season in 2003 and then 2004. I get through the season, halfway through the season, I get injured and then I move positions. And then my third year, I play more like the nickel role again. And play more special teams, and then I get traded again, and then I'm in New Orleans, and I'm back to being a full time starter like I was in 2003 and at the start of 2004, and I'm in that role in 2006, 2007. So I mean, each place is different. I think of New Orleans being my last home, really. So you know, Coach Payton still being in New Orleans. You know, Malcolm Jenkins was a rookie my last year there. Obviously, Drew Brees was there when I was there. So I still have a connection watching those guys because there's a lot of those coaches that are there that were there when I was there. So that's probably who I feel most connected with as a player or as a former player now. But each place was different and special in its own way. Because it was just a different experience, being at those different cities at those different times in my life.
Yeah, that's an amazing trio of cities. Short of going to the West Coast, Atlanta, mm-hmm. Philly, and New Orleans are about as diverse of city cultures as you can get.
Yeah. I remember going to Atlanta my first time, and I drove from Manhattan to Atlanta, and I can just remember driving in and all of a sudden I start seeing the lanes just start multiplying out, and then the cars start multiplying out, and I'm like stuck in traffic, which is, if you've been to Atlanta and you've drove in Atlanta, like that's all you do is you sit in traffic all the time. And then I get to the complex, and at that time the complex was in Sewanee, Georgia, which they just had some like trailers where the meeting rooms were, and it was the old facility. And then we ended up being there just for that summer, and then we went to training camp, and then we went to the new training facility and the new complex in Flowery Branch that first year I was there. So I got to kind of experience that, and then. Again, just like some people talk about when you in college, you have these facilities, and then you would go to some of these NFL teams, and the facilities were not nearly as nice as the facilities you had in college. And that was kind of the case when I got to Atlanta. So it was interesting just kind of going through those things as a young person trying to go from a college environment into professional football.
But you had your cup of coffee in Kansas City. That kind of had to be a neat way to round it out, kind of come back home.
Yeah. And I was living here already. And Coach Gibbs, he was my DC in New Orleans, and he was the linebacker coach in Kansas City. And Coach Zimmer, who's in Minnesota now, coaching linebackers, he was assistant linebacker coach there. And they called me and they asked me, you know, if I was interested in still playing. And I said, I'm, you know, let me think about it. And it was, those guys were great to me, and they're great coaches. And I'm like, it's in Kansas City. Like, I'll give it a go. Like, I'm going to try to go. And I was hoping that I'd be able to, you know, play for a year or two after that. But my body just wasn't able to sustain that level of, competition, I suppose, for that duration. I think about 8 years is what my body was able to handle before it started to break down.
I remember when I spoke to Nick Lucky about that, when he got towards the end of his career, he was like, please don't call, please don't call, please don't call. Cause he couldn't turn down the money or the opportunity, but your body was like, I don't want to play anymore. I'm done. And out of that inner turmoil of whether to go do it one more time or not.
Yeah. And when you see players that, you know, will kind of make sometimes an abrupt decision, and you think, oh my gosh, why are they retiring? You know, like, as a player, you know, those things go in your mind as you get later in your career, because of the toll it does take on your body. I mean, and mentally, to be able to stay at that level mentally consistently day after day, after day, after day, after day, because, you know, in the National Football League, it is, I mean, there's nothing guaranteed. I mean, there's not one day that's really guaranteed as far as having a job. Yeah. So, there's the mental side of it. And then obviously the physical side, and both of them, in some capacity, are tied to each other as well, you know? So you have to manage those things, mentally and physically. And again, some people, like, whether it's, I mean, a lot of it, I think, has to do with kind of genetically, if your body able to handle that stress. And for me, you know, I know I played 2 years as a running back and linebacker in high school, and I played 4 years of linebacker, you know, almost all the snaps in college. And then I played for another 8 full years. And that was just the point my body was not able to do it anymore. And you wanted it to, but sometimes it doesn't agree with you. And you do all the things you can to prepare your body as much as you can. And then for me, I think it was the training camp, because I got injured 2 years in a row during training camp. And at that time, it was, you know, you practice in the morning and you practice in the afternoon every day. And, you know, twice a day, 6-7 days a week, you know, 2-3 weeks in a row, it was too much. I think if training camps were the way they were now, I think I probably would be able to play a little bit longer, just because of the rules they have in place as far as how much contact you can have and how long the practices are, and that you can't have the double days and all those things.
So. Yeah. 10 years removed, how's the body feel?
You know, I had back surgery, I've had hip surgery, had surgery on my elbow, and both my ankles had surgery. But I continue, because of my job, I keep moving and I'm active. So, I feel pretty good considering all those things. And I do continue to try to exercise and work out and try to stay, keep some level of strength, to try to improve those things, you know, so I don't have, as much pain and those things. But I feel, and again, I feel pretty good considering those things that occurred that I had to have surgery and things with. So I feel pretty blessed with how I'm feeling.
Mark, it's been a pretty remarkable life. I mean, really, you think about it. There's a lot of things you can do after football, but getting to work with young people has got to be really, really fulfilling.
It is. It absolutely is. Because, and in many ways, like from what I do, I feel like that part of the development process was such a critical thing for me to be able to have the opportunity to move on and go on to be able to have play college sports and then go on to play professional sports. So I just know what that impact it had on me. And if a student wants to work hard and they have aspirations and dreams, it doesn't mean that they're going to play at Kansas State or in the NFL, but getting into that next step and then understanding that hard work, committing yourself to something and doing those things and then seeing the reward of those things and how those things tie to one another is important, because all areas of our lives that will transfer to.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty cool deal when you see the light go on for those students.
Plus, you kicked an extra point in the NFL, and nobody can take that away.
Yeah. Yeah. Some people will send me stuff like, I didn't know you did that. I'm like, oh, yeah. Yeah. I did that. Smith Center kicking days.
Oh, my God. That is just so funny. That's so funny.
Yeah. And soccer. I got to hand it to, like, we had soccer in Smith Center my fifth and sixth grade year. We didn't have football. We had soccer.
Crazy.
And I learned how to kick a ball when I was in soccer. Yeah, we didn't play football until seventh grade in Smith Center. And we had fifth and sixth grade soccer. We had we had basketball in fifth and sixth grade. And then baseball. And then I ran AU track, kind of. But we only did summer baseball.
Hmm. Cross training.
So that was it. And then we got to high school or middle school. It was all the normal stuff, but. But yeah, that was where I developed my kicking skills.
Sweet.
Back in the sixth grade.
But hey, that cross training with sports, it's valuable. It really is.
It is valuable. Absolutely, it is very valuable. So I mean, we always talked about it. Like, well, that was probably a good thing to have in my development when I was young, is to play soccer.
Well, I kept you longer than I said I would, brother.
Oh,
thanks.
Yeah.
It's always good to see you. I run into you once in a while at something, although
yeah.
I'm kind of hunkering in my basement nowadays. But, you know, hey, I'll be able to go out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I definitely appreciate all you've done for Kansas State football over the years and the support you've given me personally during my career. So I really appreciate you, Tim, and I appreciate this time that we got to chat today.
Thank you, buddy. Good to talk to you.
Right.
See you soon.
Good talking to you, too. All right, bye-bye.
It was so good to catch up with Mark, who, despite his amazing football career, remains just as kind and humble as he was when he arrived in Manhattan as a freshman linebacker ready to get to work. The student athletes at Gardner-Edgerton are so fortunate to have him guiding their physical development. August is more than halfway done, and we're nearing, ready, football season. So the life of Fitz will soon be going on hiatus. But remember, men, if you are 45 or older, go get your PSA scored. It's a simple blood test that aids in the early detection of prostate cancer. Take care, everyone. I'll talk to you real soon.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.